Hello and welcome to Women Rise, a podcast about women changemakers that explores the emergence of a new leadership paradigm which calls us to lead from within. I'm your host, Claire Molinard, and I live and work on the island of Corsica in the south of France. I'm a holistic coach and therapist. I teach and facilitate developmental programs for conscious women changemakers, helping them move from depleted and disconnected to resourced and interconnected. Every week, I meet with other women leaders and we explore the inner game of leadership and how, in these times of emergency, we are being called to our unique self-emergence to co-create a world that works for everyone. Hello and welcome to Women Rise. I'm so excited today to meet with Sitandra Hoover. Sitandra lives in the greater Chicago area. She is a global social impact and insurance consultant and the founder and CEO of B3C Global. And she's also a proud single mother. Sitandra, I am so happy to welcome you here on Women Rise. Welcome.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Claire.
Yeah, I recall our conversation recently, and I'd like for you to start with sharing about your atypical background, giving us a little bit of a taste of what was it to grow up in so many countries and cultures?
Absolutely. I was very fortunate and very lucky and privileged. My father was a tropical botanist. And so I grew up from infancy experiencing my father traveling all over the world. And so ever since I was 4 months old, I have been traveling with him on those journeys. So to numerous countries around the world, to very remote villages and communities and countries, you know, halfway around the globe. And that really informed in me and made a significant impression on not only the appreciation and the value of diverse cultures and languages and experiences and ways of living, but it also really honed in on me what poverty looks like and the challenges that come with poverty. And so seeing that from such a young age really informed upon me my own personal desire to dedicate my life and my time to alleviating that and doing what I can do from the position that I sit in to be able to reduce that suffering and bring some stability to communities and challenge.
Yes, that's beautiful. That experience was really impactful. Mm-hmm. And so tell me about your journey. How did that desire to alleviate suffering express itself through your journey, your professional journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually been an entrepreneur pretty much all my life. I was actually thinking about it the other day. And the first business I created was when I was 12 years old. And so with my father as an entrepreneur, that definitely formed and just became kind of part of the reality in our household. And my sister's an entrepreneur. And so it's just kind of the theme that we all live. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I remember from the youngest of ages, of, you know, not only having this extreme passion and burning desire to travel the world. And I remember, and I was actually, I wrote a chapter in a book for another woman earlier this year called Strong, about this sense of watching my father travel around the world and being gone for sometimes upwards of 6 months at a time. And rather than feeling the sense of my father is leaving and I miss him, it was much more about like, when can I join him and why can't I go on the trip? And so when I was very, very young, I went numerous times and traveled with him and my mom. But then there was a period of time around, you know, my adolescence, you know, middle school years, you know, tween age where I didn't travel as much. And it really was just this burning desire of when can I get onto the plane and when can I go? And so it also, coming through that, you know, not only was this real desire to figure out, you know, what can I do? How can I do it? How can I make a difference? How can I use my voice to help to alleviate, you know, poverty and suffering? But it also was really honed in within my own community. And I felt this real commitment to become a foster parent. And so I have had this desire to become a foster parent ever since I was, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years old, which I did achieve. And I got my foster parent certification a few years back, but also just other areas, right? How do I work with marginalized or low income populations, immigrant populations in my own community? And that's what I have always done. And so, you know, whether it was when I was still in high school and working as a translator for, you know, recently arrived Latin American immigrants, or volunteering in different arenas and providing medical attention to victims of hurricanes, or to activities that I do now and helping to connect the school that my son goes to with a very low income, high rate of homelessness, inner city school in Chicago. And so it really is this theme that's not just about my day job and what I get paid to do, but it really is at the essence and the core of how I live my life and how I bring people with me in the journey.
Beautiful. And Sitandra, you also had a few years working in corporate America, right?
So
how did that match with your values and freedom?
Yes, absolutely. So part of my background is as an anthropologist. And so living in so many countries, I wear my anthropologist hat as I am learning how to absorb the countries, the communities, the languages, rather than from a judgmental perspective, but really being able to observe it and appreciate it. And so after spending about a decade working in the international development arena with USAID, the US State Department, and the UN, the Red Cross, I left and decided to go pursue my MBA specifically because I had seen how much money was being channeled into sustainability and social impact projects, but not necessarily from the perspective of long-term sustainability of poverty relief. And so I really wanted to figure out how and what role does the private sector play in that arena, right? How can we develop for-profit models that focus on poverty alleviation, job creation? And so that's when I pursued my MBA in entrepreneurship at Babson College. And then I decided, and then naturally the path from there was to then go and work in corporate to really understand how to run a business, how to run and manage P&Ls and departments when the focus really is on revenue generation, expense management. And yes, it's a very good point that you bring up. It is definitely not my innate self. I am definitely not by nature a corporate individual, but I loved it. It was such an incredible experience. The people that I met and really kind of wearing that anthropology hat of walking in and thinking, okay, this is like a new country, right? How do I learn and absorb? There's different language and acronyms and ways of speaking and ways of engaging and how meetings are run and, you know, how decisions are made and, you know, what information and materials. I mean, all the way from simple things like in most places of corporate that I worked, it was very much of a PowerPoint driven reality. Whereas in the NGO and international development space, it's Word documents. I mean, there was just a whole list. And so it really was like entering a new country. And so bringing that perspective of, you know, okay, I want to absorb it all. I want to learn it all. And it definitely took a while to adjust and to learn because it was so different. And I actually put a post out on LinkedIn not too long ago about the attire, right? And wearing suits, which was also so very foreign to my reality of working in disaster zones and conflict areas of, you know, literally being in the middle of streets of Yemen when, you know, Al-Qaeda are coming through. And so a very, very different reality, but it's such a period of time that I'm so appreciative of and the learning and the experiences that I was able to bring and now hopefully, you know, contribute into social impact and financial inclusion.
I love that you brought curiosity and openness, which is the best way to enter any new country, to learn any new language. And I can't help but think that in front of you, typically you wouldn't find as much agility and curiosity in that world. And so you make it sound very beautiful. and easy, but I'm sure it wasn't that easy every day just because the corporate world is just not as flexible and there is a lot of rigidity. So how did you navigate the everyday rigidity of the bureaucracy, for example? What human skills were you able to draw from?
Yeah, that's a great point. And you're absolutely correct, right? I think I painted it with a very rosy picture, but it was, I mean, there were parts that really were fantastic and amazing that I absolutely loved and I would absolutely repeat. And then there were parts that were not. And I think that's what the challenge really was, is figuring out, you know, how do I navigate this arena that also is so different from really my innate sense of being? And how do I maintain who I really am at the core and what my passions and experiences are with a world that does not traditionally resonate with that? And it's a great question. I wish I had a perfect answer for it. I think it definitely pushed my boundaries of patience a lot more than I had previously needed to deploy. Spending a lot more time in the thought process and the alignment of people in the storytelling, in the justification of why certain investments or changes needed to be done, was very different from the world that I came from, where the outcomes and the deliverables were very clear. You know, if it was a Haiti earthquake, right, it was very clear what we needed to do. You need to provide water, you need to provide shelter, right? You need to deploy resources, right? It's very, very clear. And it's incredibly fast paced with constant pivots on sometimes a daily basis. And you're just always living on your toes, not quite sure what the next day is going to bring, but knowing what the end goal looks like. And I found in corporate, you know, it was very different, right? It was not fast paced like that. And right. Decision making took a lot longer, and who you needed to engage and how you engage them and what information you needed to provide. And, you know, telling the same story in 15 different ways to 20 different people, you know, really tested my own personal boundaries of patience, like I said, of storytelling.
It feels to me that you had to withdraw your passion and maybe to re-channel it in a different way. My sense is that you wouldn't just cut your passion, but there was a way in which you had to adapt. And I've worked with women who work in large organizations, and I've helped them channel that passion and not cut it off. Because what happens often is that we withdraw and we hide, and we have two personalities, one at work and one at home, and that doesn't work very well after some time. And so I'm interested in knowing, how did you channel that passion and how did you not hide?
Yeah, there are a few different ways. First of all, I don't think that there's a one size fits all. I think it depends a lot on the individual. I think it depends on what you feel comfortable with. I also think there are big differences whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. So I can share what I did. I think that there's actually a term I coined years ago when I was still working at Liberty Mutual. They invited me to be part of a panel for women leaders in Boston. And as I was there talking to these women of, you know, their reality, and actually these kind of same questions that you're asking me right now, I coined on the spot this idea of situational confidence. And what that meant to me was that you're always bringing who you are in your true authentic self. You just might express it in different ways. And so when I have a conversation with you or social impact leaders, right, like I might bring out different parts of who I am and how I talk about it and terminology that I use or examples that I include. But if I'm sitting in a boardroom or talking to corporate executives, I still can bring out who I am, but I'm going to need to pivot which pieces that I bring out and how I engage. And so to me, I think that's really important is I don't think it is, again, this is my own personal experience, but for me, if I entirely leave behind who I am and pretend like I'm an actor playing a different role, that is going to be exhausting and very difficult. And obviously, it's not going to feel natural. And so I think it's a lot about, and you mentioned it earlier on, right? It's about like listening and learning. And so I think a big part of it is knowing who your audience is and being able to play to who you are and your strengths, but bringing them out in different ways. And so to me, that was really critical, and being able to still be my true self, but I might need to tailor it or adapt it. But I would also be completely lying if I did not say that it was super easy or that, you know, my true 100% self was always there. And it's true, it's not. And it was very difficult to go from a lifetime of social impact, you know, surrounded and involved in disaster response and conflict management, living and working in war zones and natural disasters around the globe, to going and sitting in a corporate office, right? That was incredibly difficult. And to not be surrounded by people who thought and felt the same way that I did, who didn't have those same motivations and passions. And it's not a judgment. It was just, that's just a reality. And so that was very difficult. And so I really tried to think of other ways in which I could live those experiences and live those passions, whether it was trying to take on different projects. So, you know, at the time when I was at Liberty, for example, they were thinking about, you know, how can we tap into the Hispanic market differently? And so I got involved in a little bit of that. We went through a time period when I worked at Liberty and AmTrust through major catastrophes. And so I volunteered to be part of the catastrophe response team. You know, just a bunch of different areas. But I also knew from the very beginning when I left international development, got my MBA, my goal was to enter corporate for a finite period of time. And So I always knew that it was to be a learning experience to then leave again and to be able to bring all of the experiences together to do good. And so I think that was also important. And, you know, if you feel a passion for something and you feel like what you do in your day job is not aligning with who you are, to me, that's really important, right? Is to know that there are alternatives that are available and set yourself with some timelines so that you know that this is not in perpetuity. But really, how much can I get out of the experience right now? How much can I contribute back? But knowing that there's a timeline.
Right. And that's what you did, right? You left the corporate and now you're bridging social impact and for profit.
Yes.
Together. And again, your capacity to navigate different cultures really helped you there. You were able to really live this experience as if you were living in a different culture.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Exactly. Amazing.
And I think the word you used was curiosity. And I think just in general, curiosity rather than judgment is such an entryway to any new experience.
Yes.
And so keeping an open mind and being inquisitive, it is, you know, asking lots of questions and seeking to understand, to me, is what is so much fun, right? And how much you can learn by just being curious. And I mean, for me, I feel like it comes naturally, not necessarily to all, but I think that is also what's so important. And it's very easy to enter situations with our lens, with our cultural lens and our experience lens and our identities, but trying to kind of put that aside. And that's where my anthropology hat comes on, right? Is like setting all of that aside and walking in, you know, with a totally clean slate and just saying, I want to learn, I want to understand.
That's so fundamental to any experience, right? To enter in that way. And curiosity keeps you alive. It keeps you engaged with the present. And obviously, it creates a whole different relationship. And I'm sure that this was also felt and appreciated in your environment. The world is becoming such a scene of catastrophes cascading onto each other. And my sense is that there is a need for more curiosity, more openness, more compassion, more empathy, more of what's usually called feminine qualities. And so what is your vision for the role of women in having a greater social impact for the future?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. One of the areas I think is really important is I frequently see, you know, comments and positions about, you know, the future is a woman's world and women's empowerment. And while I can understand some of that, I really truly believe that we need to work together. It's not a one or the other. It's not a black or white. And being the single mother of a boy, I'm also very attuned to the perceptions and the reactions and the reality by pushing so much of that very feminist approach and how that has very negative consequences. And so I really truly believe that it's about working together. I think women have very unique in general, right? And we can't generalize, but right, maybe we can't stereotype, I should say. But in general, right, women do bring, you know, qualities that tend to be, you know, what we would call softer skills. And that has extreme and important value. And bringing people together and understanding and bringing in different perspectives. And I think the more women who are willing to be vulnerable and take the risk and not feel that we have to be perfect or to have the realization that our perspective matters and our opinion matters, and be able to speak up is really critical. And I've been writing about that quite a bit recently, you know, the sense of vulnerability. And I don't know if it was, you know, my own childhood or just, you know, the world in general, but I always had a very difficult time kind of portraying the vulnerable sides of myself, the more humane sides. And it was much more about, you know, I need to show, you know, that it's perfect, right? Like everything I produce and what I do, it, you know, it has to be perfect. I can't show any gaps or any weaknesses. Well, there's a whole bunch of reality and stories and other pieces behind that. But I think the more that we're able to show that we are human and to bring those perspectives forward in an engaging way are really what help to drive the conversation. And if we can be more open about that, we can bring more people onto the journey, men and women, you know, across the board and across ages and generations and countries and cultures. And that's where we really can move the needle. Right. I think just in general, and having worked in conflict for so long, you know, whenever you take a very hard line stance, and again, back to those points of curiosity and listening, you know, if you take a very hard line stance, it's very easy for anyone of a different perspective to fully reject what you're saying. And so I think entering environments with the sense of humanness and vulnerability, I think really is what is the role that we can play.
Yeah, and that applies to men too. I mean, I think it's important also in this conversation to distinguish that soft qualities, what's called feminine intelligence, is something that is accessible to men and women. And so when we say we need more feminine in leadership, we don't necessarily mean we need more
women.
Mm-hmm. No, we need more soft qualities in leadership from both men and women.
Yes.
And we also need some strong, masculine, healthy capacity in leadership. Yeah. And that is really what's going to move the needle to bring more healthy qualities in both sides.
Absolutely.
From both men and women. I mean, yeah. Hearing you talk, I hear a lot of masculine, healthy capacity. Your leadership is very engaged and sounds very focused and directional. which are great masculine qualities, which we need in leadership, right? So it's beyond the gender conversation. It's really about qualities of being. Yeah. And yes, in conventional leadership, in our corporate worlds, not just in America, but in also in Europe, there is a need for soft qualities, for community building, for more compassion, more empathy. And that is definitely something that we are leaning towards and trying to bring more of.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And I think those qualities that you just said of compassion and empathy, right? Those are not specific to one particular type of person. But it is very difficult to bring those in a professional environment, right?
Because of the vulnerability, as exactly. You mentioned earlier. And we have not been trained or encouraged to be vulnerable. No. On the contrary, we've been encouraged not to be vulnerable, as if it was a great skill not to be vulnerable.
And I think what's really fascinating, right, and it kind of goes to that conversation of understanding and knowing your audience, is that if you flip the challenge or flip the situation around, and rather than thinking about it as, you know, we need to bring these qualities because this is just the right thing to do, especially here in the United States, which is a very capitalistic society. If you turn it around from a business perspective, there are financial returns that are gained by bringing empathy and compassion into the workplace, right? Across the board, whether that's on employee retention, whether it's from a hiring perspective, whether it's from a decision-making perspective, but it's also from a customer experience and product perspective. Like, you can actually sell more products, right, by bringing compassion and empathy into the workplace. And that to me is so fascinating, right? Like, it really is both sides of the coin. It's not an either or, right? Mm-hmm. We need it because people are tired of having, you know, to be actors, right? We're tired of having to be very rigid types of people in different environments.
Absolutely. And if we follow that conversation, health-wise, it's advantageous to bring those qualities, to be vulnerable, to be compassionate, to be empathic. It's much better for your health than being rigid and being closed up and depressed at your workplace. Yes. So it is a win-win in all sides.
It really is. And again, like here in the United States, right, the United States spends more on healthcare per individual than any other country in the world, but have a lower life expectancy in relation to our other peers and higher income countries, right? And so you're exactly right, right? If we start to bring these characteristics of compassion and empathy into our daily life, right, how would that also impact, you know, physical and mental health and bring down the cost of healthcare?
And then it brings us to education. And so it's systemic. It's not just one area, it's all areas. And how do we bring those qualities back into the system so that it can work for everyone? It's really, how do we bring the system back to its original design, right? There is a sense that there is a healthy way to do this. There is a better way to do this that brings us to a different world. How do we all sign up for that?
I think that's so interesting. I think that the original design was flawed to begin with, or was reflective of the time and the period. And I think it's really about a new business model, right? I really think it's about a new way of living. And I think it's fascinating, right? And we were really in the midst, and I won't go too nerdy on all of this, but the era in which we live in is called the Anthropocene. Mm-hmm. And the Anthropocene, right? That means it's with people at the center of it, right? And, you know, well, what does that really mean, right? And you can be very scientific and academic, but to me, it's really about it's human-centered design, really. It's about putting people at the center of what we're doing, you know, both positively and negatively, right? Like, the impact we're having on our environment is significant, right? But when you put people back into the middle, right, because we're the ones that are also making the decisions, that also means that you can drive really positive outcomes.
Exactly.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating. And it also means that we have the obligation to take care of the planet because we are at the center now.
Yeah. The planet and each other.
And each other, which goes together.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we live in incredibly complex and perilous times. And at the same time, there is so much potential for shifting, for actually creating an incredibly thriving world that works for everyone. I'm going back to this expression because it feels like it's at the tip of our fingers. How do we shift the direction?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's very easy to look at the world today and be discouraged and overwhelmed on so many different levels. But I also think while all that is true, I think it is also such an incredible opportunity for individuals to make such a difference. And, you know, it starts within ourselves, right? It starts with our own willingness to be human, to be vulnerable, compassion and empathy and listening and engagement, and how small changes by each one of us really have impactful cumulative good, or taking action within our own communities. And so I think it really is just that, you know, that willingness to step outside of our norm and try something different.
Exactly. And everyone can be an actor in the change. Everyone can have a part. No one is too small. It's a choice of every day, right? To decide that you can have an impact at your level, wherever you are. You can decide to be curious, or you can decide to be closed. You can decide to be overwhelmed by the crisis everywhere. And there is good reason to be overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed very often. Mm-hmm. And I have to choose again and again and remember that I do have an impact. I can change the way it affects me. And I can let myself feel the pain and the despair and the overwhelm, and move through it, not get completely overcome by it.
Absolutely. And I think that's a critical piece too, right? Is it's easy to become paralyzed when you see everything that's happening. And so I think it's really helpful at least to start out, you know, to pick a, you know, the one area or the two areas that are of most interest and passion, and hone in on those, because otherwise, right, and I find myself doing this all the time, right? There's so many different topics that I'm passionate about, right? But I can't possibly move the needle in all of them. And so, you know, it's, you know, what areas can I do, right? And how do I focus on those? And then once you become, you know, Greta Thunberg and, you know, all other Michelle Obama, right? You can take some others on.
Exactly. And there's always a way in which you're, you know, something that you're good at or that touches you deeply can meet some need that's just around the corner from you. And also, and another aspect of that, and I don't know if you can speak to it, is community. I think it's so important that we find our people. And in today's world, we can find our people, even if they're on the other side of the world. I mean, I found you on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Wild.
And we reconnected all over the world today. And that's one of the beauties of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's such a fantastic point. And it's actually something, you know, that I've thought about and struggled a lot with in my life. When community really is, in my perspective, it, you know, it's what you define it to be. And I don't think there is one version of what community is. And to me, community really also is very much of belonging. It's not only what you exert to find a place of belonging in community, but it's also that side of assimilation, of a community's willingness, you know, and availability to bring you in to a community. And as you said, right, I've lived in 20 different countries. I've lived in so many, you know, numerous places across the United States. And so trying to find a sense of community, you know, regardless of where I am, is sometimes easy and sometimes incredibly difficult. And so I think that there's absolutely importance to finding your community and your people, regardless of where they are in the world. I also think it's really important to find those people that you can meet up with in person. And with the digital age that we're in and COVID, right? Like where we couldn't get together, I think it really created this chasm, right? Of like, how do we socialize, right? Like, how are we human beings and interact with each other? And I really think, you know, community can go all the way back to, you know, friends that you've had, you know, throughout your lifetime, right? And I have communities all over the world, but I think it really comes down to, especially in new communities, it's that sense of curiosity. And I think it's that sense of what is, you know, what is important to you, right? And how much are you willing to adapt yourself or adjust or not show who you fully are, depending on what the community is. And it's not an easy question, but whether it's a new place that you have moved to or a new job that you have or a new country that you're in, it's a challenge, right? And trying to find your people no matter where you are, you know, it's exciting and it can be scary. But I think that sense of curiosity of really trying to learn, as long as you're not forgoing your real core morals and values and principles.
Yeah. And what I'm also sensing into, we're so individualized in this particular era, right? We are so lonely. And that's not a human way to be. We're not designed for it. We're designed to be together. And so remembering that this is the first step, right? And where we're talking about vulnerability, to be in community is to be vulnerable.
Yes. Yes. And to be able to bring your whole self means you have to be vulnerable.
Yeah. And it feels so much better to be vulnerable than to have it all together, which we don't. None of us has it all together.
No, I think
it's the biggest lie.
Yeah. It is so interesting though, too, right? Because if you go on social media, what you tend to see is the best of everything. Mm-hmm. And so it's also very easy
to
see, right? And to live in this fictional world, like, well, everybody else is doing so well. Why am I not? Mm-hmm. And those are snippets in time, right? That's not the whole picture. And, you know, all these fantastic stories of people being on Zoom and it's all, you know, so clean on what you can see, you know, in the camera, but, you know, there's kids' toys and stacks of paper and baskets of laundry lying all over the place. And so I really think it is about this realization that none of us have it all together, right? That everybody is just trying to do their best and, you know, having that compassion, that empathy, that understanding that we're all really going through it at the same time. And we're all better off and support each other.
Sitandra, thank you so much for your willingness to dive into this conversation with me. I just really appreciated the way that we meandered from talking about traveling the world and being a world citizen to landing in corporate America and bringing your compassion, your passion, your empathy into the corporate world. And finally, touching on the need to be vulnerable in community and in our workplace. Such a beautiful ride. I'm grateful and I wish you all the best to you, to your son, and thank you for the beautiful work you do in the world.
This has just been so fantastic. And I love the conversation and the ideas that you brought up. And I think it's what the world really needs.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for reaching out.
You're so welcome.
Thank you for listening to Women Rise. If you enjoyed the show today, please leave us a review. To get announcements when a new podcast is published, send me an email at claire@uniqueselfemergence.com to be added on my distribution list. If you're interested in being a guest on my podcast or you would like to join my private free group for female leaders, go to my podcast description for the links to apply. Thanks again, and see you soon on the Women Rise podcast.